someone who has been a part of this franchise since day one. Speaking, of course, about Simon Mitchell. Welcome back to the roundtable, Simon.
I appreciate that, Julian. Appreciate your very kind words. Also there, Matt. It's a pleasure to be back on your show again.
Does food taste better at the moment? Does the colours seem brighter? Does song sound sweeter since Sunday afternoon?
The birds are chirping in a beautiful tune, and it's the sun's a little shinier. No, it's certainly a wonderful feeling getting up on a Monday and knowing that you put away the arch enemy.
You've beaten United before across the journey, but this one felt a bit different being there in the building, because a couple of times in the second quarter you fell behind by 15 points. You're facing a United team that don't lose two games in a row, let alone three in a row, and they ran themselves out in that first quarter. They looked like they were breathing fire. Yet you inched your way back in and you managed to get the W. When it comes to throwdown wins that you've been a part of, where would you rank Sunday?
Yeah, it'd be right up there. I think the first ever throwdown will be the most memorable. Was the first game in franchise history, and to get an historic win against the odds, you know, losing Ty Wesley in the first 5 minutes of the game after he'd had 10 points. It was an exhilarating night, and just something special just to see, I guess, all of the hard work that had been going on for the 12 months leading to that game come to fruition and in front of a full house, pantsing the defending champs was really nice. But the weekend's win was right up there for me. I get a bit more nervous watching the games from you know, in the stands than I do from the sidelines. And I was not really approachable before the game. I was pretty nervous. Yeah, we dropped the one up in Brisbane. And, that was disappointing, but we did show some really good signs in that game as well. And after the start though, I was looking for somewhere to hide.
I want to ask you as well, before hand it over to Matt to talk the real in-depth X's and O's, as far as the crowd is concerned, and I've been in Melbourne for a few years and been to a lot of these games in the time since, what really struck me on Sunday is it really felt like the Phoenix's home court, whereas the noise that was made, particularly when you went on that run and you managed to wrestle back the lead in the third quarter, we'll take the lead for the first time, it struck me as, okay, this really is a Phoenix home court advantage. Did you feel that?
Not early, but yeah, no. Even with the, you know, we've had some smaller crowds this year. Going back to the Cairns game a couple of weeks ago, it was 8 o'clock Saturday night game, and that's probably a tough draw for us. But our fans, we have a unique atmosphere, I guess, with the brass band up in the stands. I think that it really brings that sort of college feel to the basketball. We don't have the blaring nightclub music. It's very family orientated, and I think we created our own unique niche in the basketball landscape. And because we do it different, it does have a different feel about it. And we had 9,500 people in attendance. And our home crowd was up and about. You did hear the MU fans up in the cheap seats when they got on that run. But, it's unique to hear a crowd where after every bucket there's a cheer. And that's one of the beauties of having a Melbourne versus Melbourne game. But certainly, as the game went on, our cheer squad was louder and louder and louder, and it was just a great game, full of drama and twists and turns. And I'm obviously very happy with the result, but it was a great day for Victorian basketball.
I just wanted to talk about just this turnaround, first of all, and then we'll sort of get into a bit of a deep dive about some of the early start and what happened with all of that, but just from your perspective, how have the guys managed, the adversity that has come about, the extreme changes that have been made, obviously from the coaching perspective, to turn this thing around so dramatically? I mean, it starting 0-5, and I think you're 8-4 since that. So, which is, you're one of the best teams in the league right now. I don't think objectively anybody can argue that point. But from your perspective, I mean, what's been the key, do you think? I mean, what have you seen from the guys, the playing group in particular, over this, last whatever it is now, a couple of months.
Yeah, well, I'll support you with that because I'm a numbers guy, and objectively speaking, we have the best record in the NBL round four, at 8-4 and plus 73 in the plus minus. So, we're ahead of Melbourne, Perth, Brisbane, Illawarra, Sydney, Tassie, Adelaide, New Zealand, and Cairns in that stakes if you were to take the ladder from round five onwards. Look, for us, the 0-5 start was really tough. But the one thing, I guess, management, ownership, and everyone at our club who's here on a daily basis, we never sort of wavered in our belief of this group and the playing group. We always felt like that we had a pretty strong list. Now, not for a second are we saying, okay, we're not infallible, there's not some holes there. We recognise that, we've come from the bottom and we weren't able to sort of fill all the holes in one year or one off season, but we still felt the talent was there. The camaraderie is definitely there. We've really recruited some wonderful human beings who can come in and do the work. And whilst the start was tumultuous, and they've had three coaches throughout the course of the season, these blokes have never wavered from their commitment to playing winning basketball. Now, obviously we haven't always done that, but the intent has been very, very good. And as the seasons wore on and with some of the changes that we've made, they've been able to sort of get closer to their potential, we think, that they have.
Mike Kelly is probably unquestionably one of the most, I would say, beloved characters that the NBL has ever seen. I mean, I would struggle. I've known him, obviously, for a long time, and as you have, and I would struggle to find anybody who'd have a bad word to say about the guy. And look, we know he was coach of the year up in Cairns. We know it didn't quite work for him at the Phoenix for a variety of reasons, beset by injury, obviously, last season, but then the 0-5 start this season. And, your relationship with him is obviously a very, very good one. Is that one of the most difficult kind of decisions that you've had to make, or the most difficult decision you've had to make as part of your new role?
In this role, I don't think I could be here for the next 50 years, which I won't be, but if I could be here for the next 50 years and never have to make a decision as gut-wrenching as what we came to in this one, it was just a really difficult situation. I came back to the club after the year off, and I took this job purely for the opportunity to work with Mike and Tommy Greer again. I've got a deep affection for Mike. I had sleepless nights through the first month of the season, just seeing things as they were and, hoping for things to turn around. To come to the decision that we made, it was very robust discussions. And to be, truthful, it was, for the week leading into the Brisbane game, there was some talk and some discussion as to what's the best direction for this club moving forward, and then obviously after the Brisbane game, we sat down with Mike the next morning and let him know that we're going to go in a different direction. We felt we felt the team was still a candidate or still able to make playoffs. We felt that this team could still, its best basketball was well ahead of it. And we felt that the best opportunity for us to get the best out of this group was with another coach. So wasn't a pleasant moment, not something I enjoy reliving. But it's something, when it came to the decision, it was done from a basketball standpoint and not friendship. We couldn't let that get in the way of professionalism.
Was the decision made the next morning as the result of the Brisbane game? Did that force the final decision? If the game against Brisbane had gone a different way, would that have changed it? So that was happening regardless?
We recognised that we had a pretty difficult start to the season in regards to our schedule, and we had the full week to prepare for the Brisbane game. It goes back a little further, I guess. We went through a really I wasn't part of this, it was before I returned, but there was a strong review of the program. done in the off season, and there were some very clear objectives that we had, some behaviours that we needed, from that review, it was a blueprint created, and we felt like during the off season it was really good that a lot of the boxes that that came back to us, or a lot of things that we ticked off on, recruiting, player health and well-being, leadership and culture, and even to the daily structure, we felt like we were ticking a few boxes. Get an 0-5 start's difficult, but there were some things that we needed done, and we just felt going forward, the opportunity for this team was best going to be led by someone besides Mike.
So it's still the same conversation if it was 1-4?
Yeah. No, we're process driven, and the decision was made upon processes, not just the 0-5 start.
So tell us about that period of putting Sam McKinnon into the interim role. How quickly did the discussions begin from that point? Did that happen during that week that you spoke about, or did this discussion begin after you had made public the decision to move Mike Kelly on?
No, we'd spoken to Sam before going public with the decision. You can't operate a basketball franchise without open and frank discussions, and we went to Sam straight away and let him know that we would like him to be the interim head coach, of which he accepted, obviously. There was no promises for, and we didn't know the length of time, and we were honest with Sam from the get-go that we're not sure this could be, for the next month, 2 months, might end up being the rest of the season. We weren't really aware at the time, but we were working feverishly and quickly to speak to the people that were available and some that weren't available, just to find out. There's a lot of names there that you'll know of that, you've got to check in, even if it's a long shot. And it ended up being Josh was one of those long shots. He was contracted at the time. We have a relationship with his management. Our ownership has a relationship there too. And there seemed to be some, let's just check in and see what's what. And there was genuine interest there. But, that happened pretty quick. But in the meantime, Sam was amazing. From the week he came in, he had to prepare. He had a week to prepare for the Melbourne United game, on the back of 0-5. And, as soon as he entered the gym, he took the reins. And, at the time, I'm not even sure how many games we'd lost to Melbourne in a row. I know it was over five.
Six. Happened to have that in front. It was six.
Fantastic.
Who's counting? But yeah.
You've lost six in a row to your crosstown rival. You couldn't really throw an interim coach a bigger challenge.
Yeah.
But from the first session, he just brought accountability to the group, role clarification. He was leading from the front. I loved his sideline demeanor. I thought that was fantastic. His trainings were intense, and he really showed in a short amount of time that he can really coach in the NBL.
Did you ever entertain the idea of doing it yourself on an interim basis?
Not for a moment.
we can shut down all that crap that was going on about, Simon Mitchell, he's obvious, he's the original head coach, blah, 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 stick him in there. Yeah,
it was
right.
Bad enough, truthfully speaking, it was bad enough hearing some of the crap that was going on. I'm not a big consumer of NBL media, but when you hear bullshit like, they've got the ex-coach sacking the coach and stuff like that, it's like, well, it's pretty disrespectful. And really disrespectful to anyone who knows my relationship to Mike.
Yep.
To say stuff like that and like treat me as the general manager, that's my role. What I've done previously is irrelevant. Now I know from outside it might look not great, but what my old position had nothing to do with this. So yeah, that was disappointing, but you kind of come to expect that sort of stuff too from some of these people.
Take us through the moment from when Josh King first became available, when you knew that this is something that was tangible and could be done now, period, from when that happened to when he signs on the dotted line. What was that process?
Yeah, well, it was a reach out to his management, who we share with some players here, and we have a great relationship with his management, and it was just, hey, I'm going to throw you a lob. We fully expected to get smashed back over the net. But there was interest there. there's some things about Josh we didn't know, that he was an avid consumer of the NBL as product, that he knew the league really, really well. He'd just had a child in Turkey with his partner, and I think his baby was 5 months old. 5 weeks old. And you know, the idea of being able to raise your child in Australia and be in a league that you really enjoy and that you follow, there was interest, and we were shocked that there was. We just thought we'd throw the question out and take the rejection. But no, there was genuine interest, and you know, like I personally knew of Josh but didn't know him. So had some meetings with him and was really impressed. You watch his teams play and you know exactly what he's about. You know that he brings the energy. You see that on the sidelines. You know that you can see him demanding that his players play with energy. The defense is up the floor, and you know that his offense is with pace. And we know that this team was built for that sort of structure. And since his arrival, we've just seen that, you know, these non-negotiables that he has in those regards on a daily basis, and it's obviously helped turn the team around.
It's an interesting one with Josh, Simon, because I spoke to a couple of you know, connected NBL types, as you can imagine, and one of them I'll never forget sort of said to me, you know, Josh who? And initially, but then spoke to a few people even in the NBA who said, now hang on a minute. This guy is for real, and he is well respected globally. So it's you're right. It's sort of it seems like serendipity, really, for the Phoenix. What I wanted to ask you was, as it's turned out, you mentioned before about culture, which, you know, it's an off-use phrase, obviously, but so important from a basketball team perspective. Is that the kind of coach you wanted, as far as, and I'm talking about the intangible stuff, the culture driver? You know, you mentioned he's got all these non-negotiables. He brings tremendous energy. He does remind me a lot of Chase Buford, you know, he at least from afar, you know, without, and even speaking to him at, you know, in the press conferences. But is that the kind of guy ultimately that you think is the perfect type of guy to really take this team, not just forward, but to a championship level and challenging for a championship consistently, which of course every franchise wants?
Yeah, I mean, these are things that we're hoping for. Yeah, I guess, you know, one of the things that came up in regards to the off-season review was that, you know, it was an area that we needed to heavily invest in, was leadership and culture. And it's something that we did tremendous work in the off-season. You know, what does the Phoenix stand for, and making sure that people who walk into this gym or walk into our offices know exactly who we are and what we stand for and what are our non-negotiables. So from a cultural standpoint and a leadership standpoint, I feel like that we had some things, you know, very much in place. There was a lot of investment by the club into that area in the off season. So I think it's been a pretty smooth transition for Josh, that he hasn't had to focus in on that and rebuild that. It's in place. You want your own stamp of approval, your own stamp on the franchise and game. And I feel like we give him freedom from a basketball standpoint to go and do that. And he's come in and rearranged the way that we do things. As anyone who knows basketball and watches the game will see. So I think from a structural standpoint, he's been really instrumental. From a leadership and culture standpoint, I think we're in a pretty good place. I know from the outside looking in, you're 0-5 and, you know, your hair's on fire and everyone's running around crazy. That's what people imagine it to be like. But it wasn't like that at all. And the fact that we've been able to recover, I think, is symbolic of that. The way this team's been able to get through some really tough times is, you know, I think a really good guide as to where we're at from that standpoint.
And let's talk about the roster itself. You mentioned earlier, you know, that you were pretty steadfast about these guys, and there were a lot of people, you know, myself included, who sort of said, look, you know, if you're going to make that change with Mike, then there has to be some player accountability as well. But, you know, you've been very, very big on the group as a whole ever since it was recruited. And part of that, and I wanted to get your thoughts on this, is how important it was to add three guys who were championship winners: Derek Walton Jr., Angus Glover, Jordan Hunter, obviously all with the Sydney Kings. But just that level of toughness, that level of understanding how to win, how to get things done, how to deal with adversity. How big has that been, and what has their impact been on the organisation?
I wasn't aware those three had played on a championship, to be honest. I know when we got Tommy Vidanovic and Majuk.
I forgot about Tommy.
Both fresh off a championship. With the jumpers, we knew they were. But those other three, I've forgotten about that. Yeah, I'm glad you reminded me.
Oh, happy to assist, my friend.
Nah, look, mate, they're brilliant. Love and Geordie are immediately become much loved characters in the club. And look, it was conscious, not just from an aspect of, okay, he's got championship experience. I was out of the place for 12 months. The only faces I recognized when I walked back in here, besides Mike Kelly, who was still new to me as a Phoenix guy, was Owen Foxwell and one of our DPs, Luke Rosendale. Every other player had gone. The staff were different, the coaching staff and the high-performance staff. You know, our physios were the same, but the high-performance staff had changed as well. And since we've made more changes, we've changed our strength and conditioning coach as well. So, look, it's a different place. And one of the things in the rebuild that we wanted to do and establish was people who have relationships already.
Yeah.
Help and assist with, okay, these guys are on the same page. They know they can win together. They know each other's movements, and they genuinely enjoy playing together. So, it was a no-brainer when they were available to try and recruit them. For whatever reason, our team and Sydney throughout the years have always gone after the same players, and Sydney generally come off successful. even this off-season, guys like Kalele Pepe and Bull Quall who came down to us in Sydney, those guys. Sydney have been able to bring a little bit more bang for the buck by all appearances. But, you know, we have interest in the same type of player. Our interest in those guys has been, long. Angus Glover is someone that we've pursued over the years and haven't been successful until now. And Geordie was someone who, was probably our most coveted player in the off-season. I just feel like he's one of the top Australian centres in the league, and they're extraordinarily valuable with the presence of our Asian neighbours up north where they have very attractive offers to these guys. So we were really lucky to secure him for the next few years.
Yeah. And I want to talk about, obviously everybody focuses in on the experienced heads and the stars of the team, but a couple of the kids that I feel like have really, you've just mentioned one of them, Owen Foxwell, who has looks like, what is he, 21, looks about 13, and his brother looks like he's 10. It's ridiculous. Or could that just be that I'm getting old, Mr. Mitchell, as everyone well knows. But his impact, and then a next star that doesn't get the, it hasn't been getting the ink, really, of the others. When, when you talk about next stars, you're talking about sort of Ethan Almansa and who else? I mean, there are other guys, other next stars that have been getting, more media attention. But Malik Lewis, I got to say, I mean, he's been huge for your club. Can you kind of talk to the impact these two young guys have made on the franchise?
Yeah, well, Foxy's one that I'll tell you the story about Foxy and cut me off if it's too long. But he came in during the COVID year. And the first COVID year, and we had one open training session, and then COVID hit, and we were never allowed to bring a player who wasn't contracted through the gym doors again. And in that one session, I think we had about 60 blokes join the gym, and it's strange. Out of 60 guys, he'd be like, "Oh man, there was just too many guys to watch." But when I gathered the coaches up after that session that went for 2 hours, every one of us talked about the same guy. So for us, go forward about 8 weeks later, and we're still not allowed to bring people in the gym, and we don't know where COVID's going at this stage and where the lockdowns are going to go. We just decided, well, we better contract this bloke so we can get some numbers for practice. we wanted to go 3-on-3, and we only had 5 blokes who could come to training. So we threw it out there to Foxy. He wasn't sure if he was going to go to college or stay in NBL at the time. And it was, one of the great decisions I think we've made as a franchise. Someone I'm tremendously proud of. He's just a wonderful kid. And, you're right. There's not a lot of shaving razors that go through the bathroom at the family's house.
Yeah. Bruce Bolden and I once upon a time got in trouble for calling Kyle Edmund a 12-year-old when he was a development player. It just reminded me so much of that.
No doubt. And look, he's just a great human being. He's someone that we will build this franchise around going forward into many years to come. And, he's already scratching at the surface of becoming one of the leaders of this group.
He's also out of contract. You are confident of keeping him?
Extremely.
Well, I don't know, mate. The price is going up.
Yeah, well, we'll see. We'll see.
Malik Lewis,
he's had tremendous impact as the next star for us. And it's funny, like you mentioned, that he doesn't get much of the ink, which is probably true.
Yeah.
But if you were to go around and say, okay, which of these guys in the Next Stars program have actually gone up the ladder, the draft boards, he's probably gone up the furthest.
Yeah.
And look, I think he's we've not ventured into the Next Star programs outside of our first year, which was just it was like an arranged marriage. And the reason being is that, from our perspective, we've just said, well, we're about winning. Our whole goal here is to win.
Yeah.
We're not about putting guys into the NBA. Now, if we could somehow manage both, then we'd be all for it. But, watching film of Malik, we've straight away, this guy can defend at the NBL. He can rebound at the NBL. Athletically, he can compete quite comfortably in the NBL. His three-point shot in the back end of his G League season last year really took a shot in the arm. It became, pretty consistent from the corners. He has the ability to develop that further, and it's an area we're working really strongly with him. But the thing that we didn't realize, and I think even speaking to his people, they've just been amazed at the increase in his decision making, especially off the dribble. And we weren't sure about that bringing him in. We thought, okay, this could take a little while. But he's just so diligent in his work, and he works feverishly at training. And he puts himself in situations where he can improve in that. And even going back to the blitz, we had some NBA scouts at one of our training sessions. They were blown away by the decisions he made. And we've just seen it every game that he's just, he's coming along in leaps and bounds. And I think if he continues to develop at the rate he is, then he's going to be a really important player down the stretch of this season.
With where you are now on the table compared to where you are after 0-5, it's been quite a remarkable turnaround. You're sitting in sixth position, you're 8-9, you're in a play-in spot. Have you changed internally what your goals and a pass mark would be for the season as that has developed?
No, I don't think that's changed at all. I think we held, even with our decision-making, it was we held great faith in this group. We've become very, very process driven, and we hold ourselves accountable to the processes that we have in place. And if we're doing everything correctly, then you get a bit of luck. You got to stay healthy, and this is the healthiest we've ever been. It's the only healthy season that we've actually had to this point. We're giving ourselves a shot, and we're coming from a long way back in the field, but it's it's crazy. Like every team's going through its ups and downs throughout the course of the year. You see Melbourne right now, on the back of a three game losing streak, whereas 2 weeks ago, NBL pundits were telling us the benchmark. So it can turn quickly, and we're very aware of that. Whilst we're on a pretty good run right now, since round five and onwards, this can go south quickly if you're not careful. So we're doing everything every day within our powers to make sure that we keep the momentum moving forward.
For Simon Mitchell, does playoffs equal a successful season?
I guess from where we've come from, playoffs would be really satisfying to an extent. Again, there's things we want to achieve, and we want to go about it in certain ways. Like, it is such a competitive league that you needed a little bit of luck. I mean, outside of Illawarra right now, I think you can throw a blanket over pretty much everyone else. The top three have figured out how to do it on the road, and that's probably an area we need to get better at. But if you go through the last 10 games of everybody, there's only three records for anyone that's sitting in the top eight. You're either 6-4 in that last 10, or you're 5-5 in the last 10, or you're 4-6. Like, that's unbelievable that you could have eight of your 10 teams operating like that. So in recognition of the competitiveness of the league, there's many things that need to go well for us to make the playoffs. But we feel like we feel like we can do that, but that's certainly not the ceiling we're putting on ourselves.
So what is a successful season for you?
Go home with a championship. That'd be nice.
Of course.
There we go. Championship or bust. You heard it from Simon Mitchell. You can put that out there tomorrow. So one more as well. And I love this idea that you've got Saturday night. You're going to be opening the roof for the first time, hosting the Adelaide 36ers. Christmas under the stars, you're calling it. Two things. One, how long has this been in the works that you're aware of? And two, have you by any chance noticed the Bureau is currently predicting sunshine on Saturday and rain for Monday when United are supposed to host their open air game?
That'd be a damn shame, wouldn't it? The way tickets are selling right now, I think we had a record number of tickets sell yesterday. Right. So if people want to ensure that they with the roof open, I suggest they get to Ticketek real quick.
Can you confirm or deny that Romy Chowdhury has been doing a rain dance ever since Sunday?
Yeah.
I think he's filmed it and put it on media, hasn't he? Yeah, look, I was actually at the only game of basketball I went to last year was Melbourne United's open air game against Perth.
Wow.
And it was a spectacular night. I mean, it was one of the games of basketball you could watch.
Yeah.
But it was just a truly magical evening. So I do hope that Monday that it doesn't rain too hard.
Just no, little drizzles.
It doesn't rain at all. It'd be great for the Melburnians who get along to watch United to experience that. It truly is a great spectacle and one of the great things you can do playing basketball in Victoria. And, obviously it's our first open air night for Southeast and, yeah, I'm very excited. I've been privileged to be a part of these games whilst a member of the coaching staff of Melbourne United. Also last year as a spectator, and it truly is a remarkable experience, and it certainly brings a different aspect to watching the game.
Do you expect this to be an ongoing tradition from here on out?
I think if we were to speak to the powers that be at Southeast Melbourne Phoenix, I think they would love to have this. I think it's such a unique experience. I was talking to Josh King this morning about it, and he's a pretty excitable guy. This guy's jumping out of his skin about this one. He can't wait to get in. He's talked about, he's watched these games before, and he just thinks they're amazing. So It really is a special experience, and we don't take it for granted. And we hope that it's a really huge success for Victorian sport on Saturday night.
We wish you well for it and for the remainder of the season. And thanks so much for stopping by on the back of a big weekend for yourself and the club. And We can't wait to see what's left ahead of the run home for NBL 25 and potentially beyond. Thanks so much, Simon, for coming on the show.
I appreciate you guys having me on.